Trigger warning. This episode talks about hallucinations, being taken advantage of, and helplessness.
It also covers anxiety, depression, and paranoia. If you are feeling any of these, please skip this episode. Please know there are resources available to help. Please call 988.
Did anything positive come out of the hospital when you were in there?
Actually, each time I would come out of the hospital, I thought, oh, this will never happen again. So I didn't have any safeguards up. Or, you know, or if I was starting to go through no sleep, no eating, irrational thoughts, low self-esteem, pariah, I didn't pay attention to it. And then it just deepened and developed into a major episode instead of warding it off. Now, I'll tell you another. This whole thing culminated with this psychiatrist in the worst nervous breakdown I had up until that point in 1984. I had started a new job in an engineering outfit that designed highways. And I was given the task to design parking lot. I finally had more of work and more respected at work. I was there a month. And a month passed, and a friend of mine from another firm, from the other firm that was the Christmas party firm, she was going on this into this seminar, a psychological seminar, where, you know, you would like have lectures and learn to be self-assertive and, you know, review your relationships and things like that. It was a seminar. It was almost like the Earhart seminar workshops of the 1970s, if you're familiar with that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I signed up for it, you know, and that was in October of 1984. It was a 5-day program, Wednesday to Sunday, to the weekend, Sunday, before Halloween. I went to the workshop on Wednesday. We had to pick a buddy. I picked a buddy. He was a very abrasive guy. We had exercises that were confrontational. My stress factor went through the roof. I went past my limitation, having all my background. I hardly made it through the day. I took the train from the city to the suburbs where I was located in an apartment. I struggled. I didn't eat, lost sleep. And unfortunately, the apartment next to my apartment, they were renovating it. So you would hear drilling all day, which was really disturbing to me, to my ears. Didn't sleep. Well, the next day, I went back to the workshop, hardly went through it. I was disengaged. I was just not there and there, going through the motions, hardly ate or anything, came home, didn't eat, didn't sleep. I called my psychiatrist and I said, should I return to this workshop? He says, don't return. So now it's Friday. I didn't return. They tried to coerce me to come back. The partner, the abrasive partner, mm-hmm. He took a train and came to my apartment. He was outside the door. Luckily, my door was locked and closed. He called me spoiled. He said, you have to come back. You try to coerce me to go back to the workshop. He just kept yelling in the hallway and I didn't answer anything. He finally left a letter under my door and he left. I didn't read the letter. I was so upset. I just put it in the garbage. I was pacing back and forth in my apartment. No sleep. This is the third day without sleep. Hardly eating. My mind was racing. Every time I would go through these episodes, my mind was racing. I couldn't control it. That's why I couldn't sleep, because my mind was racing with thoughts. I was guilty about my sexuality. I was, you know, berating myself for my relationships, berating myself for saying something wrong, which I really didn't, but I'd saying something wrong. It was going through my head. This went on for Saturday and Sunday. My parents, they were away and they came back on Sunday night. They gave me a call and I just didn't let on that I was going through this because I was afraid they would lock me up. I always was afraid that I was going to be locked up. in an asylum forever. So that was going through my head. No sleep Monday. Tuesday morning, I barged into my psychiatrist's office. I couldn't get through to him that I wasn't feeling well. I couldn't get through to him. He didn't ask me if I was sleeping or anything. Instead, he said, I have other patients in crisis. Please come back to my office Thursday night, your appointed time. I couldn't get through to him that I wasn't feeling well. I was screaming, yet nobody could hear me. Tuesday night came, I had no sleep. This is the sixth night without sleep. And that drilling of the apartment was going on. I thought that my neighbors were going to come in and kill me. Real paranoia, out the door, paranoia. Wednesday came, and about 11 o'clock in the evening, and this was Halloween, by the way, 11 o'clock in the evening, I tied my flannel bed sheets together, forming a rope. I tied the rope around the steel post of my kitchen table. It formed a rope. I took the rope. I went to the window. I went outside. I took the screen off and went outside my window. This is the third story up, by the way. I wanted to rappel down the wall because I felt I couldn't go through my front door because people were going to murder me. So I tried to rappel down the wall. The force of gravity was so tremendous, like iron chains pulling me, that I couldn't grab the rope to rappel in the position to rappel down the wall. So in about split seconds, I planned my fall. I would land feet first and roll over to my side so I didn't hit my head. I fell. I blacked out. Didn't know what happened. I was unconscious. I fell 30 feet. I woke up in the emergency room of the private hospital. I'm still paranoid beyond belief. And I sat up, which is an idiot, on the stretcher, and then I went back down again. I had fractured my back and broke both my ankles. 1 month in critical care, 12 hours of operation, 1 month at Rusk Rehabilitation in New York City, and then 5 months in a wheelchair. Now, in January of 1985, okay, I had abandoned that psychiatrist. And I found a high-risk psychiatrist. And my life at that point started to take a turn for the better. This psychiatrist, he was a Quaker. He was a veteran of World War II, very seasoned, had four children, and great common sense doctor. He would listen to me, take notes. He included my parents in a therapy every month, he included my brother when my brother was in from the Army. Included my brother. He had essays on how to get good sleep and defeat insomnia, essays on how to eat healthy, essays on how to invest your money beautifully, how to establish healthy relationships, and so on. I don't remember all of them, but he had all these essay sheets. He would offer them. We would talk about them. He offered his common sense. He said, limit your stimulus, no living on the third story. I traveled to Europe, I had other experiences, no traveling to Europe alone. Limit your friendships, not have 30 different friends, limit it. And, you know, just take it a day at a time. Don't look 30 years ahead, which I often would do, which also spurred on my breakdowns. I would look 30 years ahead and think I'm abandoned and left to an apocalyptic world. That's why I couldn't go. That's another reason I couldn't fall asleep during these episodes, is because I thought I would wake up and wake up to a world that was abandoned, like a wilderness. And I was abandoned and all alone. So that's another reason that kept me from sleeping with my racing mind. Anyway, so my life took a turn. My breakdowns would happen every, let's say, 4 months or every 3 to 4 years. With him, and we would talk about dreams. We would interpret my dreams. I was able to share with him more confidential things in my life. We went back and studied my earlier years. And he just instilled a lot of common sense. He said, you have to know your limitations. We all have them, you know. And then when a breakdown would be coming, After about a couple of them, I had four of them over the period of 9 years. In 1999, okay, I was given the right medication, finally, an antipsychotic medication, which was very effective. A couple of years later, the right dosage was established. Took many years to find this. And with that, I was able to realize when an event, when an episode was coming on, and I would take more medicine. I would talk. I talked to my father. I would talk to the therapist. I would talk and get my paranoia out and things like that and just reason it out. And eventually, since 2010, I've been break free.
And that was how many years later? 20 years later, right?
1977 to 2010.
Holy shit.
Yep. And anyway, so guess what? So in 1980, 3 years, 2 years after with this, with I'm going to call him George, the great doctor, I found my husband. We got married, had two children, and my children grew up, you know, knowing that I had this situation because they had lived through a breakdown with me. So they were very understanding, you know, and they accepted it and it wasn't a problem because it only lasted for a duration of 3 weeks. And then I would go back to a regular schedule.
Wow.
And then, okay, in 1988, George said, why don't you take up painting? So in 1988, I left the construction architecture world. And in 1988, I turned to painting. I painted these beautiful paintings, surreal narrative storytelling. I was influenced by Rembrandt. And because of my half discipline in architecture, I could develop a full discipline in my paintings. They're detailed, they're figurative with animals, situations, very detailed. Very difficult paintings, very difficult to orchestrate. But I did it with that discipline and I built on it and built on it. And I was able to develop that discipline that I lacked in the architecture field. And I was able to channel my imagination because I have a real active imagination, as you can see. I focused it on the paintings. And then in 1995, I began writing poems to each painting. So each painting has a poem to bring you further into the story and narrative and poetry of the painting. And then in 2010, I started writing my memoir. And I started writing that. So the poetry developed into writing a memoir. And it took me a while to write that memoir. But it's called Journey of the Self, Memoir of an Artist, which depicts the years 1977 to 1987, 10 years of my life. And the message in that book, and the message here is never give up. Things may look so bleak, but a month later, you might have a different scenario in your life, which happened to me. Never give up.
So insane. I'm so happy that you finally were able to find that one doctor that was able to help you because, you know, when you're in therapy, it's hard to find that right fit. I know, like for me, I went through three different therapists before I actually found that therapist that worked for me. But, you know, you have to be tenacious about it and self-advocate. And it just sounds, and part of it is like the medical field did not do you any services.
No. And, you know, I didn't know back then, I didn't know enough. Instead of waiting 7 years with the wrong psychiatrist, after the first, I don't know, half a year, if it wasn't effective, I didn't know enough to go and find another therapist, you know, research and find another therapist that would connect. But it was so early on in this whole experience, the whole experience of therapy in society, you know, and also, and it took me a long time to find the medication. But today, it's different. If you're on a medication and it's not working after 3 or 4 months, try another medication. There's so many out there, but then at that time, there wasn't that many. I had no choice but to take what was given to me because there was hardly any choice of medication. And the therapy back then, you know, wasn't as exercised as it is today. And today you have so many different therapies. You've got behavioral therapy, cognitive therapy, and all kinds of therapies, you know, that you can experiment with to see what works with you and what therapist works with you. And that's my advice to anybody going through it. Don't wait a year, even a year with the wrong therapist or psychologist.
Right.
Go and look. And the medicine, don't wait. If it doesn't work in 3 or 4 months, don't wait. Change it, you know. And you're able to do that today. But back then, it was kind of hard to do that. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, wow. This has been an amazing episode for me. I mean, I can't even imagine what that was like for you. I love how you are able to kind of look back on it and not necessarily appreciate it for what it was, but giving yourself grace, right? No one knew what was happening, really.
No. And unfortunately, the boyfriend, Morty, he didn't accept it. You know, he treated me like a second-class citizen, and that was horrible. That just compounded everything.
You know what? Screw Morty. Screw Dennis.
Screw Dennis.
I don't like them.
No, they were not good. They were...
No.
No, they did a lot of damage.
The bad doctor.
Yeah, a lot of damage.
Yeah, but you are strong and you're here, and the message you're delivering to myself and our listeners included is to not give up.
Yeah,
don't give up. And you know what? I was in that, after that 12 hours of surgery, I was in the critical ward with casts up to my hips and a cast around my torso. And I was in the bed for 2 weeks like that until they cut the cast in half up to my knees. So you can imagine, and my mind was still racing and I was still paranoid that situation. But you know what? I was there. And then in 1987, my life took a real about face. I was able to achieve some sort of normalcy in my life. So somebody might give up being in that bed with a cast up to their neck. I didn't give up.
No. Because you had that glimmer, right? There was that little glimmer in the back of your mind of it could get better, right? And I think that's an important message, is that it can get better. But you know what? You have to be a little tenacious about it too.
Absolutely. You can't give up.
You can't give up, and you can't wait for somebody else to make that decision for you. You have to make that decision for yourself. And I'm so proud of you for finding that will and finding those answers. Your story is like so inspiring to me, because
so inspiring.
I can see how your story can help maybe somebody else that's kind of going through the same thing. But you know, you're right about therapy. You know, I'm in my early 60s, and as I was growing up, you know, we were told, you know, let's not talk about our mental health. We're going to shove that down as far as we can go. And, you know, kind of just move on. But I'm so thankful for organizations and the medical society and the therapists out there that are really pushing for mental health, because it is so important that we focus on it and get those emotions out, because keeping that shit in is just not healthy.
Yeah, these types of conversations take that shame away from it.
Right.
Right. We should be able to be open and honest and speak our truth and not feel ashamed. And I just hope that continues to grow with all these conversations. So this is
great. This is great what you're doing. You're promoting talking about it.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I'm hooked now. I didn't know what to expect coming into the conversation. And now I'm just like, wow, you have inspired me. You're very inspiring. So thank you so much, Ruth.
Thank you for having me. And thank you, really. I think that we can get the message out to people who are, you know, suffering. And that, you know, the other thing is they feel alone. That's another thing. You feel alone and you feel like you're the only one going through that, which is also compounding.
Yep.
A low self-esteem. You feel alone. You feel like everybody else is like growing in their life and they're leaving you behind. You know, they're succeeding.
So did you ever feel, because being an extrovert, like yourself, did you ever portray yourself as being like all well and good on the outside, but on the inside you were like, you just wanted to beat the shit out of yourself every single day?
It wasn't every day. It wasn't every day that I beat myself up. It was the times when I was going through an episode. Ripples, I had ripples and episodes where I would like really be very critical of myself and very harsh conscience. Always worried that I was saying the wrong thing. They could see through me, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, I would turn on myself on my episodes. Whereas in between the episodes, I would be fine. I wouldn't berate myself. I would fall into the pattern of being too personal. And then it would develop, you know, something would kick it off and then develop this self-taught, this self-incriminating, you know, dialogue with myself. But not all the time. It wasn't all the time. That was part of my ailment. I thought I was so fine in between episodes that I didn't prepare myself for the next episode.
So what do you do these days for self-love and self-care?
Well, I'm writing. You know, I'm writing a fiction book. I make sure I get my sleep. I take my medication. I talk a lot. I have a good friend, a close friend that I talk with all the time. You know, I go out and have coffee. The little things I really appreciate, you know?
Oh, I love that. Believe me, I completely agree with that.
I mean, I'm looking forward to having coffee today and a little cookie.
Oh, I love that.
That's what I've slowed down. I'm in my late 60s. Unfortunately, I have arthritis in my hands, so I'm kind of going for therapy with that so I can get back to painting. I haven't been able to paint. And my writing is kind of limited right now because of this arthritis that I have in my hands. But I've been taking care of that, going to physical therapy. And I do have some handicaps back from my injury, falling 30 feet. I wear a brace on my leg right now. So I'm taking care of that. You know, I'm just taking it easy, you know, and, you know, doing that.
Yeah, we were laughing the other day. It's like all the crap we did as kids, right?
Oh.
Once you turn 60, I'm telling you, it is from the time from you're 59 one second and the next second you're 60, and everything hurts. And it was like I snapped my fingers and everything that didn't hurt like it when I was 59 automatically started hurting at 60. I think it's mental, but I'm so happy for you. And now, can they find your book on Amazon?
Yeah, they can find it on Amazon. I have a website. Okay, it's ruthponyarski.com.
Perfect. I'll make sure to have that information in our show notes. And I'm so thankful for you sharing your journey, Ruth.
Thank you for having me.
Tenacious.
Yeah, thank
absolutely.
You. I appreciate it.
Very tenacious. I want to share that book with people because I think it will. I think it will help. You know, also by saying if she can go through all that, I can certainly go through what I'm going through, you know, that kind of thing, you know?
I agree. Thank you again, Ruth. I appreciate it. I am going to get the book for sure.
I am too.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth.
Thank you.
Hi, all. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I'm G-Rex.
And I'm Dirty Skittles.
Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. We'd love to listen to your feedback.
We can't do this without you guys. It's okay to be not okay. Just make sure you're talking to someone.